Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, February 16th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we head north to near Ottawa, Canada, where homebrewer Pete Hickey braves the cold to brew some tasty homebrew. Pete tells us how he does it and gives some tips for those of us who are not as experienced with dealing with the chilly conditions. If you're new to homebrewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And we have our 2012 Brewer's Logbooks that will help you track and log 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. And our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you this show. And we definitely appreciate your continued support. And as always, there is an Amazon.co.uk link on there, too. We have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores. We are on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we are on the Stitcher app, too. Monday is the deadline for entering your data for the Brew Your Own Magazine Basic Brewing Radio collaborative experiment on kettle trube. Does adding trube to the fermenter affect your beer? I've already heard from some early birds. I've already received some data from Joey in Orlando, Florida, and Dean in Dahlonega, Georgia. Appreciate that. Very interesting. If you haven't sent in your data yet, you can find the form at basicbrewing.com/experiment. And if you have sent in your data and you're not Joey or Dean, let me know. Drop me a line. I hope you had a great Valentine's Day. I posted an episode of Basic Brewing Video Monday this week featuring a recipe from Steve Wilkes for a special Valentine's Day creme brulee that you guys picked out by voting on our show's Facebook page. And that was Steve's idea to have you all pick out the dessert that he was going to make. And I think it was a good idea, and we'll have to do more of that in the future. I've got some great news from Kyle Clark up in Wisconsin about the homebrew legislation that's forming up there. Kyle says the Wisconsin State Senate has passed SB 395, our so-called homebrew bill. The vote held today, Tuesday the 14th, was 32-1. The bill will now be referred to the State Assembly, where it could be heard on the floor as early as Thursday the 16th. As you know, I record this a day early, so we hope things are still going well up there. Kyle says, while SB 395 is the flagship bill in our fight, another bill has been quietly making its way through the legislature, Assembly Bill 290. This bill allows homebrew shop owners to brew on-site, offer tastings, and provides an educational exemption as long as the beer or wine is not for sale. The Senate offered a concurrent opinion, 33-0, agreeing with the Assembly and sending the bill to the next stage of the journey, the governor's office. So that one's gotten farther than the original one. Kyle says, while we celebrate a victory in the Senate, we have to be ready for a stronger fight in the Assembly. Having personally attended the committee meeting where the Assembly version of SB 395 was heard, I can attest that we are not out of the woods yet. While we can now brew at our local homebrew shop, we still have to fight for the right to transport and the right to share our homebrew outside our home. For Wisconsin homebrewers, making sure your representatives know where you stand is important. Kyle says, I hope to report back to you next week, sharing a homebrew with my state representatives. Keep up the good work. Wisconsin homebrewers, we are in the home stretch. Well, that's awesome. Kyle had written me last week saying that lobbyists from the retail liquor industry had been voicing opposition to the legislation. So it looks like your voice is being heard. Keep contacting your Wisconsin state legislators to urge them to get get this bill passed, and good job on the other one. Gary Haygood from Razor Pines down in Mississippi emailed to remind us of the beer legislation that's being proposed down there. You might remember they're trying to legalize home brewing and raise the ABV limit on craft beers as well. You can find info about the Mississippi legislature by going to the Home Brewers Association of Middle Mississippi site. That's hbamm.org. So good luck to everybody down there. Last week, you'll remember, Bob Stemsky came on the show to talk about the brew session they were planning on a frozen lake up in Wisconsin. Well, it happened, and Bob posted a video on our Facebook page of the festivities. And I tell you, the sound of the wind is enough to make me want to put on a coat just by itself. I can't imagine being that cold on purpose. Be sure to check out that video and raise a toast to some hearty home brewers who are brewing despite some extreme conditions. You can find that on our Facebook page, facebook.com/basicbrewing. Speaking of cold weather, let's head up to Canada to talk to Pete Hickey about what it's like to brew in an extreme winter environment. Well, Pete Hickey, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Now, where are you? You're a little bit north of us.
I tell people I'm in Ottawa because people know where Ottawa is, but actually I live on the Quebec side of the river, which is, you know, just across the river in Hull, Quebec. And it's not even Hull, Quebec anymore because there was an amalgamation of cities and they changed the name of it. So it's Gatineau, Quebec.
Well, no wonder you say you're from Ottawa.
Yeah.
A little saves about 20 minutes. Well, we were talking because we emailed back and forth, and you said that you were brewing in some mighty cold temperatures the other day, and we got to emailing back and forth about different techniques, and I said, no, that's a show. That'll be a fun show to do. And we got a little bit of a taste of what it's like to brew in cold temperatures last time from Bob, who was on the show, talking about brewing on the frozen lake. But you have to deal with it maybe more than they do, because, you know, brewing on the lake is a bit of a novelty. But how cold does it get up in Ottawa?
It ranges. It's been down to like 40 below. That's unusual. And actually, it hasn't been really 25 below the past 5 years. It hasn't gotten any colder than that. Global warming or whatever, or maybe I'm getting old and I just talk about the old days when it was colder than it used to be, whatever. But the average, I say the average winter temperature when I'm brewing is probably 0 to 10 below, or maybe from plus 10 to minus 10 is the average temperature I'm brewing at.
Now, how long have you been brewing? Give us a little bit of your history.
Well, you got to look at the first beer I brewed was in 76 or something like that, and it was horrible, and I gave up for a long time, and then I started again about 10 years ago.
Things are a lot different now.
Yeah. Yeah, you can get things now.
As Charlie Papazian said, when he first started brewing, he didn't know hops were green until several years into it.
Yeah, well, when I first did it, I got some herbal hop tea, and I used that for hops.
Oh, how'd that work out?
You could drink it. Barely.
Well, we understand, or I've been told that home brewing is big up in Canada because of the taxation of alcohol up there.
I guess it goes from province to province. In some provinces, it's a bit more popular. Beer is kind of expensive. You save money, but I think it's more homebrewing is more not to save money, but it's people that like beer. At least that's the people that I know, people that like good beer.
Mm-hmm.
The craft brewery thing is just really starting in Ontario. Quebec, it's been around for a while, for a bit longer, and it's a lot more. But, you know, people brewing it was because they wanted good beer and they couldn't get it.
Well, good. Good. There's another myth exploded right there on the show.
I'm sure there's another group of people that just want to, you know, brew the cheapest beer that they can. But I don't know these people, but I'm sure they exist.
Now, talk about what do you like to brew?
Oh, I brew. I'm an all grain brewer. I like brewing something different. Always. I like trying this style, that style. I don't know if there's, well, I always go to an APA or an IPA. I mean, I always have one of those on tap, but I'm always trying something different. English beers, Belgian beers, dark beers, just about anything.
Now, when you're brewing in the wintertime, overall, is the severe cold temperature, is it a benefit? Or is it a hindrance? Or is it a mix?
For me, if it's a benefit. If, like my way of thinking, if you can use the cold to your advantage, it's a benefit. And for my winter brewing, I prefer winter brewing than summer brewing. Takes less time. It's more relaxing. I embrace the cold.
And it seems like it probably stays darker a lot longer up there than it does here, maybe. And it's something that you can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it is darker. Actually, my winter brewing is always in the dark.
So how do you cope? I mean, where do you brew? Do you choose to brew outside or?
Well, I boil outside. I mash inside for a few reasons. Like my winter, the way I do things in winter, I'll start the mash. I brew on weekends, so I'll start the cooking the water. I'll heat the water inside. I'll mash inside. I do 5-gallon batches. Now, if I would do 10-gallon batches, I'll do 10-gallon batches in the summer. But it's a little bit – I don't like that in the winter. So I can heat the water on the stove. I have a cooler that I do the mash in. I do that in the kitchen. I do that before supper. And it's mashing while we're having supper. And then it sits there. And after supper, I'll sparge. And then I'll put it out and I'll boil outside. And that's about it. So, you know, it doesn't take too much time out of my day. So that's nice. I can't work like that in the summer.
Are you a batch sparger or a fly sparger?
Fly sparger. Yeah, I'll be sparging while doing the dishes or something like that. I always multitask. So it's not taking time.
Now, if you're... It seems like to me, I mean, we have mild winters down here. We had 1 inch of snow today and they closed the schools, as I told you before.
Yeah.
And now the snow is gone. But even then, if it's windy or if it's chilly, I tend to move all of the entire process inside in the kitchen. And I've upgraded my stove. I have a gas stove that's got a nice big burner. So, you know, especially with smaller batches, there's really no need to go out to the propane burner. And with, you know, my wonderful heat stick that I've got from Jeff Karpinski, life is good inside.
Yeah, it could. You get humidity when you go inside, but I don't find it that bad. You see, when I'm boiling, I boil in the summer, I boil in the yard. In the winter, because the yard's full of snow, I can't get back there. I need snowshoes to get back there. And, you know, snowshoes carrying a big pot of wort, hot wort, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I just right outside my front door, I set my burner there. And I put my pot on there and I boil it right there. So I'm inside watching it. So it's not like, you know, it's not like I'm cold doing anything like that. I run out when I have to do things. I'll measure my hops inside. And, you know, when I set the timer, I have a cooking timer on the stove. And when that beeps, I run out and dump the hops in the kettle. So it's just that it's outside. But I mean, I do have to watch. The wind is fierce. The wind is really a big thing. But, you know, it can pile snow around. And if the snow is deep enough, and in normal years outside my front door, the snow piled on the side from shoveling and stuff is about 4 or 5 feet high. And that blocks the wind. Yeah. And then I have an aluminum piece of some aluminum sheeting that I wrap around the kettle, and that keeps the wind from there. And when you wrap the aluminum stuff around the kettle, you got to make sure that you don't have your hose on the inside, because if you do, it gets hot and it melts. And then when your hose from the propane tank melts and that catches fire, it's not good.
No.
I never did that, but I know somebody that did.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that makes for an interesting brew day.
An interesting attempted brew day, yeah.
I hope nobody was hurt.
No.
So things happen with the propane in the cold weather, though. I mean,
that's sort of interesting. You see, propane, you know, all kinds of gases. It's the same with propane or the CO2 for your kegs. The compressed gas is liquid, and when you open it to release pressure, the liquid boils. And as it boils, it gives off gas, and to keep the pressure as what it was. But normally with these things, the temperature that they boil at, or that they're kept at a liquid, is very low. CO2, it's tremendously low. With propane, it's around like 40 below or 45 below. As things boil, they absorb heat, so the liquid gets colder. Now, I'm sure a lot of people have noticed with propane on a cool day with a tank that's, say, half empty, after you're boiling it, while you're boiling, you'll find ice on the side of your tank. Mm-hmm. The tanks get cold. Well, when it's like 10 below, 20 below, it doesn't take that much more getting cold for the propane to get so cold that it will no longer boil and you'll lose pressure. So what I do, you know, your propane accessories guy that you had on one time, is he not listening? Because like before I brew, I'll bring my propane tanks in the house to let them warm up to room temperature. And I keep two propane tanks. And so I'll bring one out and start doing it and watch the flame. If the flame dies down because the tank is too cold, then I'll switch to the other. With two tanks, I'm always good. I know people that you can get like car battery heaters. You probably down there don't need car battery heaters.
Not so much.
No, you can get those at the local auto parts store. And some people use that to wrap around the tank and plug it in. Some people will get a big Rubbermaid container, fill it with hot water and put the propane tank in there. But it's something you have to be aware of, because you don't want to be halfway through a boil. And, you know, it's just like running out of propane, even though you still have it. It's worse than running out of propane because you still have it, but you can't use it.
Right.
So it's, you know, but you know what's going to happen. You prepare for it and it's not a problem.
Yeah, I always keep an extra propane tank handy anyway, whether it's.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's always a good idea to have that. Yeah.
Whether it's for the grill or, you know, I have one dedicated for the cooker, for the brewing, and then one for the grill. And if one runs out, I switch and
yeah,
run
exactly.
to the store.
You don't want to have a half-cooked roast or something and run out of gas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another interesting thing when you're boiling outside in the real cold is watching for boil over. It's fairly straightforward when it's not cold. You can look at your kettle and you can see if it's boiling. But when it's very cold, there's so much vapor coming off that you can't see the liquid underneath it. And you can't tell if it's boiling or it's just hot. And then all of a sudden it boils over. So that's probably the time when I have to run in and out the most often. And to keep the heat, I like to keep the cover on partially covered, which causes even more vapor. So it's, again, it's something to be aware of. You have to run in and out and check it. And you know, once the boil starts and then it dies down, you're okay. But watching for it when you can't see it, and when it's dark, you know, it's dark early here, so when it's dark, it's even harder to see it with that. So, and a flashlight doesn't help either.
Yeah,
it probably just reflects back from the vapor.
Yeah, it probably makes it worse.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, kind of like fog lights. If they're angled wrong or whatever, they make the fog actually more visible than
exactly. It's the exact same thing. Yeah.
Are there any safety issues that you got to worry about with the boil outside? Other than that,
with the boil, no, not particularly. There is, well, the only thing that's sort of amusing is running in and out. You know how your mother always told you never to stick your tongue on a metal pole when it's cold? Okay. But it's not just your tongue. It's any skin that gets wet. And when you're, you know, dealing with wort and watching the boil over and stirring it, whatever, your hands get wet. And your hand can stick to the valve on the propane tank or your aluminum door. And, well, because also I'm running inside and outside, when it's real cold, I'm barefoot sometimes, okay? And your feet can stick to cold cement. So that can cause, you know, having to call your wife because your feet and your hand are stuck and frozen, that's not good.
Keep a spouse handy.
Yeah. But also, you know, when it's very cold, your skin isn't as temperature sensitive. You can touch something and get burned and you'll feel it after. So you just got to be careful for that.
And also they say that that if you take a sip of something alcoholic, it'll warm you up. When in actuality, what you're doing is you're opening up your blood vessels and you're bringing more blood to the surface, and you could actually get colder faster. So you got to worry about that too.
Well, yes and no. If you know what you're doing, you can use that to your advantage. If your internal thing is able to heat you enough, it can warm you up. Okay, I mean, I commute by bicycle, and in the winter, and you know, ride a bicycle in 30 below, and I've got a lot of heat generated inside, but my hands get cold. A little bit of alcohol causes the blood to flow, and it warms my hands, but it does not make me colder. But I know what I'm doing.
So.
Now, so if you're sitting in a chair and you're cold and you're just sitting drinking, yeah, you're gonna get colder.
So Pete, you're not advocating have a couple of beers before you drive you commute on your bicycle. Is that what you're saying?
No. It's like after to get the blood flowing to warm you up and whatever.
So a few jumping jacks by the side of the brew pot.
Yeah.
So after you've done your boil, one would assume that the biggest advantage, or one of the biggest advantages of brewing in really cold weather, is the cool down period.
Yeah, it can be. Now, I used to chill with my immersion chiller, and it would really go fast because, you know, you attach the hose and the water's like ice cold coming out. It would chill very fast. But an immersion chiller, I found a lot of problems with it. maybe it's just me, but I always get drips when I connect it to the faucet, connect the immersion chiller to the hose. It drips a little bit here and there. And those drips freeze and form really smooth ice, which is really great for slipping and falling on.
Yeah.
And then after you're chilling, if you're not really fast at draining the water out of your immersion chiller, it'll freeze and crack. And your hose, if you don't drain all of the water after that, the next brew session, your hose is filled with ice, so you can't use it. So you got to bring it in the house, put it in the bathtub with hot water, and drip it through the house as you bring it out. That's not good. But, you know, there are all things that you can do, but I've given up on that. And I've, like I say, embraced the cold. So a good boil to make sure that DMS and DMS precursors are gone. And after my boil is finished, I just put the top for the last 30 seconds to sanitize the top. I put the top on the kettle, and then I just leave it there on top of my burner. And like my brew is, I mash before supper, I sparge after supper, and then boil, and then leave it there and come out the next morning, and usually like 6 o'clock in the morning, I put it in the carboy and it's chilled and it's beautiful. When you chill like that, the temperature of the wort's around 40 degrees. Now that's 40 degrees Fahrenheit, not Celsius. Mm-hmm. And it's crystal clear. You get beautiful cold break. And I just find it's great. And because I don't have to go through that, I don't have to worry about the chilling. It saves time. I don't have to clean my chiller after. I don't have to worry about putting the hoses and stuff away. It's saving me time by chilling like that. And when I get up in the morning, you know, at 6 o'clock and just put it in the carboy, everybody else is asleep. It doesn't take any time out of my day either. It's, to me, it's a great system, chilling like that.
You gotta remember to transfer the wort when you get up, or otherwise, if you wait for too long, you'll have a big wort ice
warticle.
Yeah, wort ice cube out there.
Yeah, but it takes, you know, it takes, even when it's at 20 below, it takes a lot. You've got that volume, and it takes a long time for that to get really cold.
Now, as we mentioned last week with Bob, you would assume that just putting your kettle in an ice or a snowbank would cool it down pretty quick, but that's not necessarily true.
No, actually, the best, well, you put it in the snowbank and it'll stay warm a long time. Snow is a fantastic insulator. If you've ever gone camping and built, well, I guess with an inch of snow, you can't build igloo. But, you know, if you sleep in an igloo, you have this house built of snow, and it could be 25 below, and it's warm, well, relatively warm inside. It's going to be like around 30 inside. The snow is a fantastic insulator. The best way for chilling is what I find, I have a big Rubbermaid container that I leave outside in the winter, and it has a couple inches of ice on the bottom. I set it on that, and the ice starts to melt because it's contact, you know, it's in contact with that. The wind hits it, and a bit of water from the melting ice against it. Again, the water transfers heat or cools things, right? You go swimming in a cold lake, you get cold right away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You go in that same temperature in the air, it's not as cold. So so having it in a bit of cold water there really helps chilling it.
So if it's at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or around, 4 degrees Celsius, do you have to warm it up a bit before you pitch?
Again, embrace the cold. Winter is lager time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Again, my way of thinking is you think of the cold and you use it to your advantage. In the fall and the spring is for ales. Winter is for lagers. So I'll usually pitch at that temperature. Maybe it'll, you know, I always prefer pitching a little bit cooler than the fermentation temperature. Pitching cooler and let it come up to the fermentation temperature rather than pitching warmer and have it go down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you go the warmer to colder, if you do it too quickly, you could put the yeast to sleep.
Yeah.
But if you're warming it up into their comfortable range, then they're waking up, one would assume.
That's my way of thinking. And also when it's warmer, they'll start producing more esters and whatever right when they start. But if it's colder, you won't have that.
So how do you maintain your temperature, your fermentation temperature?
Ah, that again, you know, you look at the cold, what you have. I would love to have a nice fridge for fermenting with a temperature controller. I don't have space in my house. What I've done is I got this 2-inch thick blue styrofoam, and I made a box that's big enough, a bit bigger than two carboys, and I have a temperature controller. And rather than cool it, I heat it. I keep it outside, and I keep something to heat it. And what I use is a couple of 100-watt light bulbs. The reason I use a couple is light bulbs sometimes blow. And if you have a light bulb die and you don't check on this for a week and all of a sudden your carboy freezes, well. But I did find, though, I had two carboys freeze on me just a few weeks ago. I accidentally hit an off switch before I put the top on, and they were frozen solid. And I defrosted it, and the yeast was still alive. The fermentation locker was still bubbling once it melted. So I'll know in another couple of weeks how good this turned out. But I mean, again, it's that. For me, I don't have the space for a fridge, so I take advantage of the cold outside and, you know, a 100-watt bulb in there, a couple 100-watt bulbs to do a little heat, keep it at the temperature I need. Works great.
That sounds like genius. That's why fight Mother Nature when you can use it to your advantage?
That's exactly it. You don't fight. You take it. You, like I say, embrace the cold. You do what you can with it. You take advantage of it.
So it seems like to me that overall, that you enjoy the wintertime better than the summertime?
Well, I do. The main reason is because I don't have to chill, so it saves me time. And because I don't have to chill, I can do that split. I can split my brewing session. Mash, have supper, sparge, boil, sleep. Wake up, rack it to the carboy, and it's really taking very little time out of my day.
So how completely do you have to switch gears when it comes to summertime? I mean, is your summertime brewing pretty much familiar to what we would be familiar with around here?
Yeah, exactly the same type of thing. It's the same thing. Chill it with the immersion chiller and you stay there stirring it while you're chilling it to try to get it chilled and then rack it. It's in one session because of that. Yeah.
Now during your summertime, what's your tap water temperature?
Oh, probably around it's like August, the end of August is the warmest. It's probably around the mid-60s.
Okay. All right.
So it's down south you probably have it way warmer.
Yeah, it's a little more than 80 degrees Fahrenheit, which is like 26 C, something like that. So,
yeah,
we have to resort to extraordinary measures to get the wort chilled at times. So with us, you know, the winter is a lot easier to chill as well, even though I'm sure our tap water doesn't get down as cold as yours does.
Yeah.
So are there any other advantages that we haven't talked about?
Oh, there's, you know, little things that you want to crash chill a carboy before kegging or something like that to get the yeast to settle. You can put it outside for a day or something like that. It's, you know, there's little things like that. Carbonating, when you want to carbonate your kegs, the CO2 is, oh, that's another advantage of having very cold, the wort very cold after the chilling. The colder the liquid is, the more gas will absorb in it. So when you want to aerate your wort, you do a better job of it when it's like 40 degrees than when it's warmer. And again, when if you want to carbonate your kegs fast, you put them outside and have them just about freezing, and it absorbs the CO2 much quicker.
I never would have thought of that.
You know, again, it's, you think of the cold, you think of how you can use it to your advantage.
Well, Pete, it's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you talking to us.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. It's been fun.
Well, thanks again to Pete for the fun interview. Pete emailed me later with a couple more tips. Pete says, I forgot one thing about embracing the cold and taking advantage of it. For those who don't have a lot of freezer space, your shed or garage is a giant freezer. Make an extra large batch, collect extra wort in 2-liter PET containers, leave them frozen in the shed. They are great for starters or for some, a quick small batch hopping or yeast experiment. More good advice. Appreciate that, Pete. Your whole world is a freezer up there. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site, along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is now available to order. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time, and we've got shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com, and if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Backyard Sugarin, a complete how-to guide, third edition. It's all about making maple syrup. And Camp Chef, 120-inch portable outdoor movie theater screen. Cool. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping, and we greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget you can also join the American Homebrewers Association or subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com as well. That's all until next week. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer, production help for Basic Brewing Radio, and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.